So we have the voluntary, the intentional, I would say. That's better than voluntary. The intentional action. We have made up our mind to do something, and we're doing it. But then we also have movements which are involuntary. We don't notice them. We move our hands, we move our heads, we move our the body language. That too are mindfulness objects, those movements. And when we do watch them and become a keen observer, our movements become more exact. And we don't make so many unnecessary ones, which is also a way of conserving energy, physical energy. Even though we think we might have lots of it, everybody does have a limited amount of energy. So we do make a lot of movements which are not productive. So we can learn to watch those. That doesn't mean that we become stiff as a board or anything like that. It just means that we try to use our body in the best possible way. And when we are mindful of the body and watch the intentions, watch also the involuntary movements, it follows automatically that we don't forget, that we know what we're doing, and that we are really concentrated even on the smallest details. And this is an interesting aspect of mindfulness and of spiritual mindfulness. Attention to small detail. If we don't attend to the small details within us, the big ones won't follow. We have to find even the small and tiny bits of hate and greed. And when we do, it's a relief. See, one of the things also that people do wrong is that they see in themselves all of a sudden some unpleasant characteristics. And they get very unhappy about that. That, oh, I didn't know I had so much hate, I didn't know I had so much greed, I didn't know I wasn't mindful enough, or whatever. And they get very unhappy about it. And they think of themselves in a negative way. But that's totally wrong. They should be very happy about it, that they found it, because they've got it. So, and they've had it all the time. But now, having found it, is a cause for great happiness, because we can only change what we are aware of. So if we actually find something that needs change, it's a cause for joy. And if somebody else has been the trigger for that, we very often get angry at that person because they made us aware of our own unfortunate reaction. We should be immensely grateful to that person. What a wonderful person. I finally found out how I'm reacting. I mean, the person was probably very unpleasant. And so our immediate reaction is, I don't like that person at all, terrible person. But we should be grateful. We should bend our knees in gratitude. Say, it's marvelous. He was so unpleasant. Now I know all about my reactions. And then, only then we can change. So the mindfulness of the body, which takes pride of place and should always be come back to outside of meditation, of course, we let go of it when some strong thought or emotion is within us. And we'll talk about those factors of those foundations of mindfulness tomorrow, because we have four foundations of mindfulness. But also, as we become more and more aware of the body, we see it in a different way. Now, we watch how the mind has said, put on your shoes. And we don't take it for granted that the body is putting on shoes. We know that the mind has said, put on shoes. or the mind have fit, come to this meditation retreat. And so the body sits here. If the mind hadn't said, come here, the body couldn't make it. It's impossible. So we watch that and we see, that's interesting. Mind gives the orders, body follows. The first step of insight. Without it, we'll never keep our meditation going because we're too body-orientated. Practically everybody is quite body-orientated and the mind is taken for granted. But actually, it's quite a wrong way of looking at it. The mind does all the ordering about and the body tries to follow. Now, if the body is healthy and young, it can usually follow the orders. If it isn't healthy or is old, it can't follow all the orders. But it's the mind that sets the pace. So that's another very important thing that we learn with the mindfulness of the body. But then, having seen that, there comes also a new way of seeing the body. Namely, so far, up to then, most people would have considered the body is me. And we don't find it so terribly difficult to let go of that. If we can watch the impermanent nature of everything that is part of the body. Now the breath, each movement. If, for instance, we were having movements that are not impermanent, what would happen? We'd turn into a stone, wouldn't we? I mean, we couldn't possibly continue living. All our movements have to be impermanent. A breath, obviously, we'd be dead if we didn't have an impermanent breath. Heartbeat, blood circulation, everything has to be impermanent. And yet, we look at it in a different way. I like to compare that to a meandering brook. Now, you see the brook is moving along, and it's quite pretty. And then you want to get a hold of it. So you put your hand in it and try to grab it. And what do you get? Nothing but a wet hand. You can't possibly grab any of it. It just keeps moving along. Now, if you were absolutely determined to make it stop, you don't want it to move along anymore, the brook. Make it stop. So what do you get? A stagnant pool. You don't have a brook anymore. It's the same with a human being. If you stop it from moving, what do you have? A corpse. That's all you get. And yet, people live constantly as if everything were solid. Everything were the way it is now. And yet it's constantly moving. Constantly changing. So if you see that change in your movements, that change in your breath, if you watch that and remember maybe the simile of the meandering brook, you will see the body correctly. Now as you see that, you might also forget about or let go of rather the idea, this is me. And get more the idea, oh, the mind must be me. Or, if you've gone through that one, then you're stuck with the observer is me. Well, but what does that do about the body for you? We're still with the body. It usually makes people think, okay, I'm not the body, but I certainly own this thing. Now there you can also investigate. If you really own this body, why does it so often do things that you'd rather have it not do? If you were a true owner, why don't you have any real jurisdiction over it? it gets older and uglier. It gets sick when you want it to be well. It's tired when you want to be awake. It's hungry when you have no time to eat. It gets exhausted and you really don't want to be exhausted. You get a cold and you're sniffling, or you got a backache, or you got knee aches, or why does it do all these? Well, you don't want it to do that. So if you really owned it, why haven't you got any jurisdiction over the thing? Where's the owner? So this is another way of having a look at our mistaken view of the body. Having another look at the idea we have. Who says, where is it being said that there's an owner sitting inside? How did we get that idea? And maybe we can come up with the reply. It's just an idea. But mostly people come up with, well, it's got to be mine, because nobody else is going to claim it, so it's got to be mine. But again, why? Where, who says that it can't actually belong to anybody? Can't we just see it as a body? A body consisting of many bits and pieces, consisting of the primary four elements, or the four great elements, which all materiality consists of. And if we try to do that, and we'll try to do that in a contemplation just now, we get a far more objective view of this body. And as we get a more objective view of it, it's not so much me, it's a body. A lot of our concern about its size and shape and beauty or non-beauty, and its age and its looks and its health disappear. It's just the body. That doesn't mean that we don't look after it. It's a house we live in. We look after the houses we live in. But we don't think that all the things that are in that house are necessarily us. I mean, we don't think that we are the refrigerator, do we? And yet the refrigerator is inside my house. And I try to keep it clean, don't I? And defrost it when necessary. But it's just a refrigerator. Well, it's the same with this body. The refrigerator consists of many different parts, and it's very useful, especially in this climate. You've got to have it. Well, so is this body, consisting of many different parts, very useful, carries the mind around. But it has all its malfunctions and its functions, just like any refrigerator has. And since we never think, I am a refrigerator, because of course a refrigerator hasn't got a mind, by the same token, why do we think that this could possibly be me, or even mine? Now with a refrigerator, we think it's mine because we've paid for it. But basically, even if we live in a place where the furniture is provided, we think it's mine because we use it. That's the same as the body. We think it's mine because we use it. But these are all ideas. They have no real basis in fact. And this is something which is necessary, where we need the words to be used in a way which is different from what we usually denote. Look at the words and see, what do they mean? Could it be possible that this is just something I'm using, this body? Now, you know that we speak about the rebirth, and obviously a totally different body is reborn. So there we've got a totally different refrigerator, because the old one wore out. You know, we had to get a new one. The old one just had to be junked. It's the same with the body. The old one had to be junked, it was no longer functional, so there's a new one. And again we think, ah, it's me. And we go through the whole misery again and again, and worry about it, are concerned with it, and want it to function perfectly. Nobody's ever had, by the way, a perfectly functioning body, although some people claim that they've heard of it. There's no such thing. Perfection can only be in the mind, and that's only for an arahant, an enlightened one. Perfection in the body is an impossibility. Simply also because of the fact that it needs constant refurbishing. It needs food, and it needs drink, and it has to digest and excrete. So it has to go in and out. So look at that too. That's part of body mindfulness. It doesn't mean that we don't look after the body. It doesn't mean that we are disgusted with it, nothing of the sort. It means that we have a more neutral stand towards it and aren't so adamant about our ownership of it, but recognize the fact that we use it, but not own it. When we think we own it, we of course immensely concerned with it. I mean, like, you know, wanting it beautiful and perfect. But if we think we're using it, we can be a little more relaxed about it. And if we realize that it has nothing to do with me, but that it's just the body, we also don't have to be so afraid of its sickness and disease and old age. But just the way every functioning manifestation goes, whether it's a car or a refrigerator or a body. So mindfulness can extend to other materiality, like, for instance, trees and bushes, even cars and houses. If you look at a house carefully as a keen observer, you will see that here and there it needs paint, here and there it's got cracks, here and there it's got has been banged, trees in the same way. And eventually, if nobody repairs the things, and trees have to repair themselves mostly, their function stops, and they have to go to the compost heap if they are natural items, or they have to go to the junk heap. And it's exactly the same with us. It's no difference. And yet we think this is me and this is mine, and we're so concerned with it. And that concern translates into greed and hate, wanting to have and also wanting to get rid of. The less we can be concerned with that, the more we can let go of wanting and not wanting. One of the things which can help us in that respect, and all of that belongs to the mindfulness of the body, and you can practice any of them, all of them, one of them, whatever you like. These are all suggestions. They are not hard and fast rules. The Buddha never made hard and fast rules. He always said, well, this is the way it would be useful to do it, and you can try. One of the things which is very helpful in order to get a different slant on this body is the meditation on the four great elements, or rather the contemplation on it. Now, when we speak about contemplation, we are actually speaking about a way into insight. Contemplation is geared towards insight. Now, the word itself is being used in different ways in different traditions, but in this in the Buddhist tradition, or specifically in this one, contemplation means an observation of universal laws as they apply to myself. In other words, taking the universe into myself, making the macrocosm work for the microcosm. Seeing what is true everywhere and seeing how I personally also have that truth within me. Now that's a contemplation. A contemplation is not personal problem solving. People love to do that in contemplation. They've just had their lover depart and they're going to solve that in contemplation. It doesn't work. Because what is the lover departing? It's nothing but impermanence. So if they were to contemplate impermanence, it might work. But it certainly doesn't work to contemplate your lover departing. So, which happens all the time. Or they've had some, the doctor told them that they have some sickness, and now they're contemplating how they're going to get out of it. That doesn't work either. What works is when you contemplate that all manifestations, all existence is dukkha. That works. And then see the dukkha in oneself. So contemplation is the universal situation translated into the personal. How does it affect me? What does it mean to me? Now obviously in contemplation we have the same problem that we have in meditation. We need to remain concentrated on the one subject. And if the mind wanders off, we have to gently and lovingly bring it back. We should never scold it that it does such things, because everybody's mind does things like that. But we should be determined about it. We could treat it as we would and educate it, like we would educate a small child that's intelligent enough to understand what we're saying. Saying, look, this doesn't work, do it differently. But if we scold the child, we don't have much chance of making a big impression. So it's much better to do it lovingly, again and again and again. Patience and perseverance. These two P's are most important in meditation. Patience and perseverance. Without them, nothing happens. And patience and perseverance are sort of like, in spite of setbacks and in spite of possible confrontations with that what one doesn't like, one just keeps on with it. And eventually it all falls into place. It all works out in a way where there's peace. So we can do a contemplation right now on the elements. But I suggest that before we do, that you might like to stand up and stretch your legs. In order to start, we'll put the attention on the breath for just a few moments. Now I'd like you to feel in your body all those parts that are solid and that you can easily recognize. And the solidity you can feel sitting, touching the pillow, touching the floor, hands on the body, and any hardness that you can feel. If you can feel skin, hair, anything at all, can go through the body and feel all those points where you can feel solidity and hardness, compactness. You can feel the compactness of the body. You might feel the compactness altogether or in different spots. All that is the earth element. Earth element has as its characteristic solidity and compactness. And as its function, it has foundation. Now, as you feel the solidity and compactness of this body, you can also feel the solidity and compactness of the cushion you're sitting on. Now let the feeling of the body flow into that cushion so that the two compactnesses, the two earth elements, merge. And then let it flow into the legs, from the legs into the floor, so that all this compactness merges, that there's only one earth element, not separated from another. And as you feel this merging, move your mind to the side of the house, touch the wall of the house, and let the earth element of the house merge into the earth element of the hand. Both have solidity and compactness, hardness. And now we'll go outside, and the feet touch the earth. And our feeling of earth element within us flows into the earth element that we stand on. We're not separate from it. We can see and feel quite clearly that it's the same solidity that we feel within. And then we walk on it and put our hand on a tree. And again we can feel the compactness and solidity, the earth element of the tree, flowing together into the earth element that we have in our hand. And from there merges with our whole body. So we have it merging from the feet and the ground on up, all the way through the body, to the hand, to the tree. Earth element of tree, earth element of earth, and we containing the same. And now we'll go and walk on the grass and feel our feet and the grass merging together. And the same with the bushes, flowers. Small plants and large plants. Wherever we go, whatever we touch, we feel the earth element within us and the earth element in nature around us. We look up at the sky, and as we see the clouds, we can tell that the clouds also contain earth elements, because they are visible and manifested. And so we allow the earth element within us to merge with the earth element in the clouds. And now we gently move back with our feet through the grass and the undergrowth, back to the side of the house. Wherever we touch the door or the handle on the door, we can feel the solid compactness of the earth element merging into our own. We walk along the floor, feel it in our feet, sit down on the pillow and feel it in the earth element of the pillow and our feet. And feel the earth element all through the body, the solid, compact aspect of the body. Now we take a look at the fire element within us, the temperature that we feel in our body. The fire element is the temperature as characteristic and destroyer as function, but also rejuvenator. Without the fire element, we wouldn't be able to digest. Without the fire element, we wouldn't age. It destroys, but also rejuvenates. As you know from the forest. So we feel the temperature within us. From head to toe. And then we feel the temperature of what we're sitting on and let one flow into the other, not being separate. And as we walk outside, we let the temperature off the floor flow into the soles of our feet. and the temperature of the door or the handle flow into our hands. And they merge. And then as we come outside, we can feel the temperature of the earth itself. And we can connect that to the temperature on our feet. And if we stand in the sun, we can feel the temperature within us rising, and we can also, through touch, feel the temperature of the ground around us rising. We go to the tree, and as we touch it, we can feel its temperature. Maybe cool or warm, but the temperature of the tree merges into the temperature of our hand, and the temperature of the ground merges into the temperature of our feet, and we are no longer separated, single entity, but connected. As we walk over the grass, we can feel a different temperature, and that different temperature is also then in the soles of our feet. Maybe also the body, and we merge with that. And then we go into the shade and can notice that the temperature of our body and the temperature of the ground around us diminishes, gets less. And again, we can feel the togetherness. We go to a little stream and dip our hands in and feel the temperature of the stream affecting the temperature of our hands and then affecting the temperature of the whole body. And now we think of ourselves as going into the ocean. And we can feel how the temperature of the water in the ocean affects the temperature in our whole body. And we allow the temperature of ourselves and the temperature of the water to merge. And now we gently walk back to our sitting pillow. Becoming aware of the different temperatures in sun and shade as they affect the ground and ourselves, as we can merge into them, do not have to be an outside observer, but have the feeling of unity. And as we sit back on our pillow, we feel the temperature within us from head to toe, joined to the temperature on the pillow. And we become aware of the water element. Now the water element within us is all that's liquid. Its characteristic is liquidity. Its function is adherence, which means that if you put water into flour, it sticks together and makes dough. So we have adherence because we consist of almost 80% water, which gives us the optical illusion of separate entity. We feel the saliva, perspiration, the eyes, if we can become aware of the blood pulsating, and we certainly can become aware of adherence. All our parts being together. This togetherness is also apparent in the pillow we sit on, and we let ourselves merge into that. It's apparent in all physical manifestations, such as the floor, the wall, the door handle. And as we go outside, we can feel the water element in the grass, the juice or the dew, and let it merge into the soles of our feet. And as we put our hands on the tree, we can feel the sap. And the sap merges into our hands and through our body to the feet on the grass. Come to a small stream, and as we dip our hands into that, the water element of the stream is obvious, and it actually adheres to our hands and arms. We're covered with it. It influences us, makes us cooler, and certainly wet. We try to merge our own water element with the water element of the stream. As we come out, we stand in the rain. And we merge with that water element. as we look up into the sky, we can see that the clouds are filled with that water element. So we connect our own water element, 80% of us, with the water element in the clouds. No separation, no separate entity. Unity of manifestation. And we go to the ocean and dive under a big wave. And we can feel the merging of this body with the water in the ocean. We lose the separation.